Hello, and welcome to Tea is Good, Books Are Better, the podcast where we drink tea and talk about books. I'm Raven.
I'm Jessica.
And we are here today reading a couple more chapters of Shadow Scale by Rachel Hartman. Before we hop into that, what are we drinking today, Jess?
I'm drinking my orange turmeric tea that I find so delicious.
Nice.
Are you drinking tea?
No.
All right.
I'm drinking raspberry lemonade.
Ooh, how's that? Sweet?
It's pretty sweet.
Hmm.
Yeah. I just needed something refreshing because I was eating a spicy dinner.
What'd you have?
We had Gordon Ramsay's chili beef lettuce wraps.
Ooh, that sounds good.
They were good. They were good, but it was a bit spicy. I like spicy, so I was fine.
Mm-hmm. Was Jake fine?
He was surprisingly okay, but I also have a feeling he was just trying to hide his discomfort.
Oh.
Because I know that he doesn't like it when things are too spicy.
Yeah.
But I always get upset when it's, when he like stops eating something that's spicy. Not because I want him to keep eating, but because I feel bad that it's too spicy for him.
Yeah.
That he like won't eat it. So I have a feeling that because my birthday's tomorrow, he's like trying to be super sweet.
Eating the spicy foods.
And forcing himself to eat it. I could be wrong. Maybe it wasn't too spicy for him, but.
Mm-hmm. Johnny used to be like that. He couldn't eat spicy foods.
Mm.
But, you know, I just did not stop cooking with chilies.
Yep. You just gotta train your tongue, bro.
Yeah, he got used to it. Now he likes it. And is very thankful that I weaned him into it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Maybe he should talk
he really likes spicy. Just bit by bit, keep adding chilies.
Just sneak on a little hot sauce here and there.
Just a little bit. Start out small.
Yeah. I love spicy food. Like, nowadays, See? If it's not spicy, I don't want it.
Have bulldog noodles.
Oh, I've had those.
Mm.
I think I've only had it, like, once, and it was like I was eating acid.
I would recommend maybe, like, the four cheese or something.
Okay.
Did you hear the train?
I did hear it. I thought that was, like, the TV or something.
Oh, no. That's the train.
Oh, does it get, like, annoyingly loud? I'm probably going to hear it at my place pretty soon, then.
I really like it, actually.
Oh, cool.
I like the sound of trains.
We can hear it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the very early morning or something. But it's, like, super soft.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's it's how like, it used to be at my old place. We'd hear it, but it'd be very quiet, too.
Hmm. But you and me aren't, like, far at all anymore.
No.
Maybe your window's just, like, pointed at it or something?
Probably. It's literally just a couple of blocks down.
Hmm.
Isn't it? I think so.
I haven't heard it here
yet. And my window is wide open, too.
Oh,
it's probably hot as balls in here. Stinking hot in here.
What the heck?
As soon as I walked in, I was like, what the fuck?
Don't you have a thermometer?
Yeah, and it's down at the very lowest setting. No heat, please. Still blasts. Somehow heat still gets in the apartment.
Hmm. Weird.
Yeah. It was the same with the last apartment. The temperature is just uncontrollable.
Well, that fucking sucks.
Yeah. Oh, well. Windows are open.
Yeah. You're not there for that long anyway, right?
No. Nope.
You getting excited to move? Or are you kind of dreading the move?
Dreading it sounds stressful as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Jake's coworker moved to Calgary from here, and I think what they did was he like drove the U-Haul from here to Calgary while his wife and kids flew. Which makes sense. Obviously, you don't want your kids trapped from here to Calgary if
Not
you can
in
help
a
it.
vehicle. A lot of kids cannot deal with car trips. I don't know how our parents did it without, but a lot of kids cannot deal.
Mom was always like very prepared. There was like the huge tub full of food, and I don't really remember ever getting like antsy or anything. I loved car rides, I feel like.
Yeah, like somehow we learned how to occupy ourselves. I think we're lucky that we're this music loving, like music is enough to soothe us, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Because that was like literally my favorite part of road trips was listening to music.
I would listen to music and then like look outside the window and imagine a dragon like running along the mountains and stuff.
I imagined horses on the street running along with traffic.
Yeah. That was
Yeah,
all we needed.
our imagination.
Now there's all the iPad kids, right?
Oh, feel bad for those kids.
They need an iPad and a phone and a fidget spinner and music in their ears and 30 games, and
Feel
seems
bad for them.
rough. Yeah, I feel like I want to try to avoid putting tablets in my kids' hands for as long as humanly
I
possible. But I also get it at the same time, like if it
Like
helps you as a
sometimes
parent.
parents need a break, but I didn't have an iPod when or a tablet when my mom needed a break. I think children should learn how to be bored. Should be something everyone learns how to deal with.
I agree, especially because I think creativity comes from being bored. And I don't really know what the value of, like, maybe more research needs to go into it, but I don't really know what the value of putting an iPad in your kids' hands is, other than to, like, get them to
Keep
shut up.
them, yeah, it's another way of babysitting
But again, I am not a parent, so this is me sitting on a high horse that I do not deserve to be on. So things might change when I become a parent.
Perhaps.
But yeah, it does make me sad that like the kids that I see in my life are always on their tablets and I never see them like playing with each other. Or like at Christmas, for example, they'll get a bunch of new toys and they'll open it and be excited and then they'll just put it to the side and like go straight to their tablets. And I guess I don't really know how to feel about it, but something about it just like makes me kind of
They
sad.
don't really play with their toys because that requires too much imagination, which is too much work when they can just sit in front of a tablet and watch.
Yeah. But again, I don't know. I don't know how these kids turn out because, like, this is the generation right now that's all the
Yeah, this is the
iPad
first
kids.
generation.
So who knows how they'll end up. We will see.
Couple of decades, you'll notice. Yikes, I'll be in my 50s.
Stop it. Stop it. All right, let's not talk about that. Let's not talk about how I'm turning 31 tomorrow. Mackenzie had a third the big 31 balloon in their apartment when we got there yesterday, and the first thing I said when I saw it was, "Ew."
Eric was like, "Oh, they're in the wrong order." He wanted it to
I'm
be
turning
13.
13. Flip
13.
it around.
Yeah.
All right. Well, shall we? Oh yeah, I'm drinking raspberry
Stop.
lemonade. That's where we ended.
Jesus.
So where did we leave off, Serafina?
Chapter 2, I believe Abdo and Lars learned how to connect their minds to make the small force field, which gives Serafina some hope. Dame Okra warns Serafina that finding all the half dragons is a bad idea and that she had had a premonition of Seraphina finding a bad one, a bad half dragon.
Ooh,
exciting. Then chapter 3, Seraphina is given permission to head out ASAP in search of the other half dragons. She recruits Abdo to join, while the queen instructs Dame Okra to go as well, much to their displeasure. She's a buzzkill.
She is.
All right.
Sweet. Yeah. So we are on chapter 4.
Chapter 4. All right. So the description of their travels is summed into one word. Thank God. Miserable. We're a little bit traumatized.
Yes, we are. And this one was one paragraph of travel, and I was, and then it was done. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God.
What?
Oh my God. It's so crazy. It's possible.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
So basically just tons of mud and Dame Okra complaining the whole trip. 4 days after traveling into Ninis, they arrived at the capital, Sigosh. As they traveled, Seraphina would pay attention to Glimmer Ghost, Bluey, and Finch, as she thinks they are Ninish based on their looks. Mm. She even once saw Finch in a vision moving through the streets of Sigosh.
Mm.
When they arrive at Dame Okra's house, they are surrounded by servants moving their luggage inside, and they finally get to clean themselves. The next day, Seraphina and Abdo set out to find Finch, using Abdo's ability to see Soulfire, since neither of them speak Ninish, to ask around.
Right.
From what Finch is usually wearing in her garden, Seraphina thinks that Finch is a plague doctor. From her visions, she has glimpsed him in sick rooms.
Okay.
3 days of searching the streets of Sigosh, Abdo finally sees a faint glimmer through several buildings.
Well, that was fast.
Right. Ooh.
I did not expect her to locate one in the literally the next chapter.
Mm-hmm. Finally.
Things are actually moving here.
Yeah.
Stunning.
They run to the direction, going into alleys that get sketchier and sketchier. And finally, Abdo spots him at the edge of the city where the country starts crawling in. He grabs Seraphina's hand and they race towards him as he ducks into a crumbling church. They skid to a stop at the church and Seraphina knocks at the door. Right when she's noticing the moaning and stench coming from inside the church, Finch opens it. He's wearing a plague costume and has surprisingly kind blue eyes.
Wait, they can see his eyes? I thought he had the big mask on.
He did, but like there's like spectacles that she can see his eyes through.
Okay.
She asks if he can speak already, and when he confirms, she asks if they can meet when he is done there. Finch tells her that he's never done, that there are many who are suffering in the city. Seraphina insists that they need to speak with him, and she gives him a couple of coins. Finch doesn't seem that interested until Abdo speaks to him with his mind. Finch then tells him that he has time in the evening to meet them at Dame Okra's house.
He was like, why didn't you say so?
Whoa! Dame Okra wasn't home when they got back, so Seraphina grabs her flute, and she and Abdo head out to play music and dance. They do this a lot for fun during their travels.
Are they like busking?
Perhaps. They make it back to Dame Okra's place at dusk. When they arrive, Dame Okra is in the dining room with a younger man. Okra tells them that their armed escort is here and that they will leave the next day. She introduces her great great grandson, Joskin.
Great great grandson.
Great great. Wait, grand cousin.
Grand cousin.
Not grandson.
That makes sense.
Great great grandcousin. No.
Okay.
He politely greets them.
Wait.
Huh?
Do you think any of the half dragons have kids? Can they reproduce? Do we know that?
I have no idea. Maybe they.
I feel like maybe they can't.
Like mules or ligers. They can't reproduce.
Okay, I have a feeling that they can. Maybe we read this in the last book or something.
Hmm.
Sorry, go on.
I don't recall. So Joskin politely greets them, and Dame Mokra tells them that his mother makes her clothes for her, and the two of them know of her condition.
Okay.
Joskin had sent ahead heralds to spread the word of rewards for the search of a hermit and a muralist, so they can get help later.
Muralist, you mean?
Muralist.
Okay, that is hard to say. Muralist. Okay.
Dame Okra freezes in her chair, and Abdo tells Serafina that she's having a vision. She jerks awake and says that there's a creature at the door, and she rushes to the door just as they hear knocking. Serafina rushes after her, trying to tell her who it is because she forgot to tell her that they found Finch. But Okra opens the door first and cries out in disgust.
Oh, rude.
Orders Finch to get to the back of the house and take off his diseased clothes before entering her home. Serafina notices that Finch was in cleaner clothing, but he was just still wearing his muddy boots and plague mask. Serafina apologizes for Okra and just has him take off his boots and leads him into the dining room. Joskin recognizes Finch and greets him, giving him his seat. He introduces Finch to Okra as Count Pesavolta, who has been working with doctors trying to prevent a plague.
He's a count?
He's a count.
Wait, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Is that high status or is that mid?
Maybe it's mid.
Let me see. Count. It's a nobleman in most of European countries, equivalent in rank to a British earl. I want to look up, like, nobility ranks. Let's see. Okay, in descending order. Duke, Marquess, Earl, Viscount, and Baron. So it's, like, mid-tier. If it's equivalent to an Earl.
The only count I know is Dracula.
What about Count Chocula?
You got
what
me there.
What about the Count from Sesame Street?
The one who counts. Ah,
get it?
Damn.
Damn. All right, go.
Dame Okra tells him to take off his mask and he complies. Under his mask, he has a thick, strong beak with serrated edges.
Whoa.
Y'all. He asks them to call him Nedward, and he tells them that he had believed he was the only half-dragon in existence.
Why does he have a beak?
Exactly. Serafina and Abdo show him their scales, and Okra tells him that she has a tail, but she has no interest in showing him. Yeah. Edward.
Honestly, that would be kind of weird. Like, here, let me pull my pants down.
This is my bum.
Yeah.
More like she pulls up her skirts.
Oh, yeah.
Awkward. Edward explains that he was born with the beak, and he was raised by nuns when his mother passed away during childbirth, which, no wonder she passed away during childbirth.
Can you imagine with trying that to fucking push beak? That thing out? Fuck.
Jeez. You probably tore up.
Oh, God.
Serafina tells him that she is searching for other half-dragons to help with the dragon civil war in Gorod. And she tells him that she plans to form a community of them, like a safe haven. Mm-hmm. Edward likes the idea, but asks to think about it. Serafina tells him to take his time, that she is heading out to find two more Ninis and will be back in 6 weeks. Well, they are Ninis, but another, I guess, another city in Ninis.
Right. Or just two more here before she leaves, I think is what she's trying to say.
They're gonna head out. They're leaving.
What?
They're gonna leave the next day somewhere else.
Oh, like they're not coming. Oh, yeah, I guess you're
they're
right.
They're not staying in this city. Yeah.
Okay, you're right.
Sagosh. Dame Okra ends the conversation and basically tells Edward his welcome has run out, so he gets up and leaves. Yeah, she's like, okay, we're done.
So rude.
Whoa. Serafina escorts him out and apologizes again for Okra. When she comes back, the three of them appear to be looking for something. Serafina asks, and Dame Okra angrily tells her that Finch has stolen 3 silver spoons.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess maybe he's taking the money, taking them to sell for, I guess, his plague brooms.
Or maybe he's just
a thief! A dirty scoundrel!
What's the word for it? Where you're addicted to stealing?
Oh, a kleptomaniac.
That one. Maybe it's just That'd a be... fucking klepto.
Yeah. Josskin leaves before dinner. Through him, Seraphina learns that the other heralds know that they are half-dragons as well. Seraphina is flustered that they know, but Josskin assures her that the Ninish are more relaxed about half-dragons than the Goretti. Josskin tells him to be ready in the morning and leaves. Daemilkra storms off cursing, and Seraphina feels exasperated by her. Abdo offers to try to use his mind fire to make Okra forget about the sullen spoons in her disgust of Nidward.
Whoa.
Seraphina is horrified and tells Abdo not to even think about that. Abdo apologizes, saying that he was only trying to help, but Seraphina tells him that Okra must be in control of her own mind, however much they disliked it. Yo.
Did you get why?
Why what?
Why she's so passionate about it?
Yeah, the grotesque in the cabin.
Janula.
Like, what's her name? Janula. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was triggered.
Yeah, because I guess she's still remembering when Janula tried to
invade her mind. Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't want anyone else to experience that, I imagine.
No, of course not. She knows.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing.
But how the fuck Abdo can just erase someone's memories now?
I don't know if he knows if he can, but he's certainly willing to try.
Holy shit.
I knew he was our villain.
He is the secret villain, I think.
Abdo apologizes, saying that he was only trying to help. But Seraphina tells him that Okra must be in control of her own mind, however much they disliked it. At bedtime, Seraphina is still shaken by Abdo's offer as she tries to settle in. She enters her garden, which, ever since Abdo says it looks like a gatehouse to him, has taken on a 2D flare on most surfaces. That's crazy. Seraphina takes a moment to focus and bring the garden back to 3D.
Weird.
She checks Janola's cottage first, making sure the padlock is still strong. Then she puts everyone else to rest and returns to her room. She pulls out the sweetheart, Nick, and flips the switch. A bored voice answers, asking her to identify herself. Seraphina tells him, and she hears a chair scrape and a door shut. She waits a bit, and then she hears two voices excitedly yell, "Fina!" And she smiles.
Fina!
That's chapter 4.
Do you think that one day Seraphina is going to descend into her garden and go to check the padlock and Janula's house and it's going to be gone?
Ooh. Yeah, because Abdo unlocked it.
Dude, I know this started as a joke, but yeah. He's been acting a little sus.
Yeah. Freaking me out a little.
Yeah, like that suggestion is fucking wild.
Yeah.
Like, who would even think of that?
It's just because he's 12 and doesn't quite realize that what he said was fucked. But, yikes.
Wasn't there, like, didn't he hurt Fina or something in, like, the last chapter when he was practicing with the mind fire?
He was trying to connect to Lars through Seraphina's mind. To connect the three of them.
And then afterwards he was all like, "Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have tried that through your mind."
Right.
Like, what are you doing, kid? And then he also said that thing about her garden, and now her garden is, like, getting all twisted.
Oh, shit!
It's like he's planting that in her mind, like Inception.
Yeah. Abdo this whole time.
And
he's not really 12.
He is the one who got out of the garden.
True. He did leave the garden and entered her full mind.
Yeah. He's done it.
Yeah.
Yo.
And isn't he like some sort of like voice for a god or something? Like, he's special.
Yeah. He's like promised to one of the... He's promised to check on the Porphyrian god of chance. So this could all be some icky religious hoo-ha.
Could be. It could be.
But I am starting to get a little sus. I'm gonna keep a close eye on him.
You better. ready for five?
Yes.
Okay. Joskin arrives before dawn and heads out with Seraphina and Abdo. They meet their escorts at the city gates. There's 8 soldiers on horses, and the horses are wearing little bells. So they are not quiet when they move.
Okay. Guess they don't the leader, care about being stealthy for some reason.
Nah. They're just letting everyone know, here we are. The leader is Captain Moy, who introduces the group as Desocho, the 8.
Which sounds Desocho, like Espanol.
Yeah. Very much like Espanol.
Yeah.
They usually... right? They usually accompany visiting dignitaries. They set off with the soldiers surrounding Seraphina and Abdo. While traveling, Captain Moy rides up to Seraphina and tells her that he's been looking forward to this job. It's the thrill of looking for 2 randoms in Ninnis that he finds challenging, and he wants to discuss more of who they're looking for and their appearances. Okay. Ahead of them, Seraphina sees Abdo making friends with a female soldier who seems to be understanding his signing a little bit. Captain Moy notices as well and excuses himself to discipline the soldier. Mm. Joskin tells Seraphina that the woman is Nan, Moy's daughter.
Okay.
At the end of the day, they arrive at the palace that they are staying at for the night. It looks more like a large farmhouse than
farm
a palace.
Farmhouse.
Seraphina. Farmhouse.
Farmhouse.
Captain Moy and Joskin join Seraphina to the main house, and Abdo snatches Nan by the hand and takes her with them as well.
He's conspiring with her.
They arrive at the double doors of what appears to be the Great Hall, and Seraphina pauses. Joskin asks if she's nervous, and she admits to it. Joskin asks if he can give her some advice. He tells her to perform, to stand up straight and talk like she has every right, and they will believe her. She takes a deep breath and enters. They come upon many people brushing the wool from goats, washing the wool, and spinning it. The woman at the spinning wheel is the Baroness, and Joskin introduces them. Joskin tells Seraphina to read the orders, and she pulls out her letter, straightens up, and reads with authority while Joskin translates for her. The letter is from Queen Cresselda, asking for aid with the inter-draconic wars. The Baroness is honored to help and has her servants fetch a paper and pen so she can write back to the queen.
Well, that was easy.
When they leave, Seraphina tells Joskin that he was right, but he warns her that not all of them will be so gracious. The next morning, their escort arrives at breakfast. Captain Moy pulls out a map of Ninnis, and they plan their search of the 2 half-dragons. Seraphina tells him that she saw Bluey painting a mural at St. Fionola at Meshi.
What?
I believe Meshi is the city that they're traveling to.
Oh.
In Ninnis. And St. Fionola is a church.
Okay. Got it.
Moy is excited by the answer and shows her Meshi on the map. Seraphina tells them that the other is a hermit in a forest. And Moy shows her that the city is basically encircled by a forest. So they make a plan to search for the muralist first and set out. After a week of traveling, Seraphina has met with a few barons. Some of them were pretty defensive about the summons, and one even screamed in her face.
Whoa.
The one that screamed at her, though, still committed 15,000 fighting men as well as many supplies. Okay. When Seraphina tells Cresselda this at the end of the day, she's delighted. While they're chatting, Kiggs offhandedly mentions a murder, and Seraphina is filled in on the happenings in Gorid.
A murder?
A murder.
I want to go back to Gorid, man.
Commonaut has established a dragon garrison, and the Sons of Odgo Ogdo have started protesting until eventually there was a riot and a dragon officer went missing. They found her burnt body in a warehouse by the river.
Like, in human form? Let me say that again. Like, in human form? Okay, let me try that one more time when you're not coughing into the mic. Like, in human form?
Yes, in human form.
Yes, in human form. Okay, yeah, why is she just getting fucking kidnapped and shit? Just turned back into a fucking dragon. Where's that?
I think so.
I mean, I think it's illegal or something while they're in Gored, but still, you're about to get fucking burnt to death.
Yeah. I wonder if there is, like, something to prevent them from turning.
Oh. I don't know.
Me neither. Okay. Where am I? By the river.
Down, 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 down by the river.
Kix doesn't think it's a good idea for Kamenot to create a garrison, but Griselda surprisingly defends Kamenot, saying that he was just trying to help.
Oh, and she also, I don't know if you wrote this down, but says, like, that he was saying several times when he told her about it, like, this is a gesture of good faith. This is a gesture of good faith. Nice, Kamenot.
That's so funny.
For those who don't remember, Seraphina advised him to supply a gesture of good faith to Griselda. So funny.
Love it. While traveling again, Seraphina becomes aware that a lot of their escorts actually seem racist towards half-dragons.
Oh.
Some of them would make the Saint Oggo sign if she or Abdo got too close, which I think is like your thumb and your first finger making a circle.
So like
your other fingies up.
The okay symbol?
Yeah. A little bit like the okay.
Or the, like, what is it when you hold it below your waist?
Is that a gang sign?
No, it's like a, what is it? Some sort of game, some sort of prank, where if, like, you spot someone holding it below their waist or something, they get to hit you in the nuts or something like that.
What?
Yeah, it's some sort of, like, childhood game.
Yeah. Thing them kids would do.
Fuck. Yeah, a lot of children's games were like, let's hurt each other.
Right.
In a way that we all agree to.
Consensual. That's all that matters. Some of them would make the St. Ago sign if she or Abdo got too close. They'd hold the sign over their horses that their Abdo and Seraphina were riding. And one held it over her heart while Seraphina spoke to her.
Okay.
Once Nan brought a basket of breadsticks, which Abdo snatched three from, the other escorts who were going to grab some paused until one of them did the symbol over the bread. Nan saw this and threw the bread on the ground and ripped the man off his horse and beat the fuck out of him until Moy stepped in. Yeah. It's like, don't you dare hurt my precious little boy.
No, this is Abdo controlling her mind.
Wow!
I'm telling you.
Little shit. When they arrive at Meshi, Seraphina and Abdo want to head straight to St. Fionola's to ask about the mural painter. Inside the church, they see the mural, and it makes Joskin gasp at its beauty. A priest greets them in Ninish, holding a clay bowl containing sticky rolls. Joskin tells him to try one, and Abdo lunges in and takes a bite of one. His eyes bulge, and he tells Seraphina that she has to have one right now. So she takes one, and they're pretty fucking nasty, because they're covered in pine sap.
Ew, what the fuck?
Do you remember tasting pine sap as a kid?
I'm pretty sure I did it at Christmas by accident.
Yeah, that shit ain't nice. Ain't nice at all.
No, it's not. But I was helping set up the Christmas tree in the house, and I think when I pulled my hand away. I had sap on it or something. And
you licked it because you're a little demon.
I didn't lick it on purpose. I don't remember. Maybe I forgot it was on my hand or... Oh, yeah. You know what it was? It was like only a little bit on one finger. And I was like, oh, my saliva will get this off quicker than
Oh, water. Yeah. True.
So then I did lick it on purpose and it tasted like fucking ass.
Yeah. It certainly does.
And I regretted it.
Yeah, as a kid, I made that mistake of trying to clean my fingers with my saliva and ended up tasting the sap too. She forces herself to swallow the bite and she ditches the rest on the altar. Joskin asks the priests about the muralist while Serafina notices that the mural has a signature. Odd Frederica des Urn. Serafina points out the name to Joskin and he tells her that odd means great and that the priest told him that she's been commissioned to paint Santi, Gioberti, and Vilo, which is deep in the forest.
In the forest where the other one
is. Yeah. How convenient.
How convenient.
Abdo then tells Serafina that he sees a soul light not far off from where they are right now.
What the?
And that chapter ends there.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Jeez, they're running into these half dragons fucking everywhere.
Right? They want to be found. It's Janola.
Oh shit. She's just fucking here.
Right? She's been following them because Abdo was telling her where they are.
Ew! They're conspiring.
Yeah, they are.
I think that suggestion of Abdo's really honestly tipped the scales for me on him. Like, I'm pretty, I'm actually pretty sus of him right now.
Yeah. He is definitely as the sign. He's up to shit.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? Who even, like, I get that he's a kid, but who, it's not like an ability he currently has, so why would he immediately suggest that? Unless it is an ability he has, and he's used it before.
He is Genoa.
And he makes Serafina forget what he looked like when he invaded her mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that.
He makes Serafina think it was some girl that she managed to lock into the little cabin. And he's like, nope, I've been out here this whole time, bitch.
Her favorite grotesque.
Becoming all your along. Favorite. Getting on your good side. So I can manipulate you.
Yup.
What were your thoughts? What are you interested in?
Finding out who this dragon is that they randomly spot, half dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the odd Frederica Death's Urn is just hanging out? Or is it Glimmer Ghost? Or a total rando?
Or Janula?
Wow.
Well, it's nice that things are, like, progressing fairly quickly.
Yeah, the wait around. Read so much.
We don't have to read a whole bunch of nonsense until we get to the good stuff.
Right. Descriptions of muddy footprints.
You can't get over that, huh?
No, that was offensive. I did not need a couple of paragraphs on muddy footprints. Okay? George R.R. Martin, this is why it's taking you forever to write the next line.
Could be.
Get a ghostwriter, for fuck's sakes.
Oh, shit! Alright, on that very non-controversial statement... we're gonna end it.
All right.
If you want more of the podcast, you can connect with us on Instagram. You can follow our podcast, TigBab Podcast, or choose to follow us individually. My username is Krimby, and Jess goes by Jess.Egan24. Additionally, find us on Facebook by searching for TigBab Podcast or Tea is Good, Books Are Better. Also, don't forget to explore the music of our talented friend, Barum, on Spotify. He created the catchy jingle you heard at the beginning of the episode and produces amazing ambient tunes. Perfect for reading, actually. So it's Bahrambient on Spotify, and that's spelled Bahrambient. Lastly, consider checking out our Patreon page at patreon.com/teaisgoodbooksarebetter. We offer a $5 tier where you can listen to us force our brother to watch Game of Thrones, or enjoy outtakes and access other behind-the-scenes content. Most importantly, sharing our podcast with your family and friends would mean the world to us and greatly contribute to our podcast's growth. Thank you so much for being a listener. And join us next time to find out who the fuck that Mindfire belonged to, and maybe whether Abdo is the true villain.
Oh yeah.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Beautiful.